Commissioners, we're here to decide whether to appeal or not to. Before I launch into an analysis of that opinion for decision-making, I think I should remind you of how we got here and why this is being litigated. I assure you it was not because of anyone's figment of imagination, pure desire, or thin air, and certainly not by anyone's genuineness in this city. Based on state law, state statute specifically 2-6-401, sub 2, sub C. And that quite simply provides that the definition of public records as relates to local government does not include preliminary drafts. So the city followed that precept and statute, and court has decided that error. So let's take a look at how the district court arrived at that conclusion. First 8.5 pages of the district court's decision, as you can see, is merely a recitation of the legal process arrived at the court hearing, followed by a recitation of the stipulated facts, followed by a recitation of the party's arguments before the court. So then, starting on page 9, in about 2.5 pages, the court renders its decision finally. It makes 3 points, so let's take them up 1, 2, 3. First point the court makes is that it draws a distinction between two definitions in separate statutes, a definition of public writings in 2-6-101 and a definition of public records in 2-6-401. 401 statute the city relied upon. I submit to you that it's a distinction without a difference. There is no difference between public writings and public records. One includes the other. A public record is a public writing, and a public writing is a public record. So what's the point? There is no point in it. I don't think that has any relevance. Now, the second point that the court makes is, as relates to duty 2-6-401, the statute the city relied upon, and the court says that it only relates to local government records retention, and well, that's true, that's what the statute relates to, but once again, I submit that the constitutional mandate of open records applies across the board. It doesn't matter what the statute is speaking. Speaking of public records, it's either constitutional or it isn't. It doesn't matter if it's being spoken of in 2-6-101 or 2-6-401 or some other statute. We're looking at what the Constitution provides. And there's another with the court's reasoning here, and that stems from the 1995 Supreme Court decision, Montana Supreme Court decision in Becky versus Butte Silver Bow. We relied upon that heavily in our argument before the court. It's virtually the key, besides the statute, to the decision. And in that case, the Montana court looked directly to section 2-6-401. That's the section that we're relying upon in its decision. Let me read some quotations from that Becky decision for you. Court says, "We first note that the Montana Constitution does not define documents of public bodies, does not define it, that the issue of what constitutes such documents has not previously been addressed by this court. What constitutes a public writing has, however, been addressed by the Montana legislature, 2-6-101, 102, also 2-6-401, sub 2 MCA, which defines public records. At last, 401 sub 2 is the statute the city is relying upon. The court's looking directly at it for a definition of public record. Finally, the court concludes its reasoning in Becky with this statement. The result would be the same pursuant to 6-4-401, our statute, which defines public records in the context of local governments, including school districts. So, Montana court has said that it is looking to this section of law relevant to the local government, find public records. It has done so in the Becky case. In fairness, Becky case did not analyze the subsection 2-C of 401 relates to inclusion of public drafts, definition of public record. That's the subsection we're concerned with. Court in the Becky case did not discuss that or address it. So that's why we're here and why we're litigating the point. But the whole point is that district courts trying to distinguish 401 as only relating to records retention has clearly been superseded by the Supreme Court's decision in Becky, where they look to define public record. So what then does the court really base its decision on? And that brings us to the third point of the court's decision. And interestingly enough, it's a one-liner. Find it on page 11 of the court's opinion, bottom of the page. Judge Phillips says, however, if the city has those drafts, they must be disclosed pursuant to the public's constitutional right to know under Article 2, Section 9. Period. That's it. That's the basis of the court's decision. That's the court's conclusion. One-liner, the court does not support it with any cited precedent or any further authority. Fine, but you would wonder, of all the decisions since rendered with the in the arena of public right to know, since the adoption of the Montana Constitution in 1972, how the court could come to its conclusion without the citation of any supporting authority. I suggest that it might be because the primary supporting precedent is the Becky case. The court's decision would struggle trying to distinguish the Becky case because that it defines public record from the very statute that the city read. So, but it will not gild the lily for you. We all know, I think since the adoption of the state constitution in 1972, that at the time it was a very avant-garde constitution in its visions, particularly the individual rights and the public's right to know. Progressive as far as any other state constitution, more progressive than the U.S. Constitution. Since that time, the Montana Supreme Court has been very, very vigorous in the extreme in upholding all the individual rights of the Constitution, including the right to know under Article 2, Section 0. When you're looking down the barrel of this thing, take into consideration what I've said about the Becky case and the state legislation, but also understand Montana court has been very vigorous in coming down on the side of the public's individual rights, especially the right to know. So that leads us to the real decision of the district court. District court also went on to decree plaintiff's fees in this case, as that is indisputable, a correct conclusion. In fact, it's statutory 2-3-221 allows the prevailing party a constitutional challenge to be awarded attorney's fees. Received an affidavit this week from the plaintiff claiming fees $9,600. So found that if this is appealed, win on the appeal, that he will also presumably be required to pay their attorney's fees. Now, that's sort of the technicality of the decision and the subject as I see it. But when I was preparing the brief for the district court hearing, I thought that it also necessary to discuss some of the practical implications in this case. What is it going to mean if every document that's a draft document is accessible to the public? And by the way, what's the definition of a draft? A scrap of paper that I write on at 3 o'clock in the morning when I have an epiphany, bring into the office and then use that in some document drafting. It ain't a piece of scratch paper, public document, a draft, as well as the draft I'm working on. You know, where does this end? So, with that said, however, I wondered if there was some authority somewhere that would assist in better articulating the matter than I could. And so I turned to my magic computer and thought maybe the Federal Freedom of Information Act might assist. And in fact, lo and behold, there's an Exemption 5 of the Information Act that exempts draft documents from record. There have been several federal court decisions interpreting that, provision. One of the best that I found was Chicago versus U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, a federal district court decision. And let me read some of the rationale from that decision for you. I think it's instructive for our consideration. The court said this, that policy concern applies to draft versions of documents ultimately destined for release to the public. Presumably, the agency employees or outside contractors charged with the preparation of such documents would feel unduly constricted in their tasks and would produce inferior work if forced to produce while swimming in a fishbowl, as it is frequently styled, of public scrutiny. Creative or unorthodox ideas that might have been put forward in draft versions of documents could be stifled if their authors knew that the documents were subject to public view. Further, public confusion could result if ideas that were purely personal to the authors of draft documents were taken or the official position of the agency. And then finally, there was a concise summary in the Denver Law Review of 1994 of the Exemption 5 of the Federal Freedom of Information Act. And they said, the deliberative process privilege contains three policy bases. First, privilege protects candid discussions within an agency. Second, it prevents public confusion, which results from premature disclosure of agency opinions occurring before the agency establishes final policy. Third, it protects the integrity of an agency's decision because the public should not judge officials based on the information they consider prior to issuing their final decision. So that's the rationale and the basis of supporting the federal exemption. It does not control our state law or our state constitution. I submit it is a relevant consideration where our Supreme Court should consider whether or not our draft documents should also be open to public access. Right? We have one more issue to discuss with regard to this subject. To the opinion of the court, but it relates directly to the public access of documents. Prior or subsequent to the filing of this legal action, SME, through their attorney, filed a series of affidavits claiming trade secret protection for documents documents in the custody of the city. They did that pursuant to state law, again, state statute, the Uniform Trade Secrets Act, 30-14-401 and following sections. I think it's instructive for you to know what some of the statutory language is regarding trade secrets. First place, what is a trade secret? There's a definition. Quoting from 402, trade secret means information or computer software, including formula, pattern, compilation, program, device, method, technique, or process that derives independent economic value, actual or potential, not being generally known to and not being readily ascertainable by proper means by other persons who economic value from its disclosure or use, and is subject to efforts that are reasonable under circumstances to make essentially a trade secret is information that value and closure of which would prejudice the owner of that. There's a remedy also in the statute under 403, a party claimant can seek injunctive relief to prevent the closure of such trade secrets. But if the disclosure is made, there are damages under section 3014.404. Provides this, the complainant is entitled to recover damages for misappropriation. Damages may include both actual loss caused by misappropriation and the unjust enrichment caused by the misappropriation that is not taken into account in computing actual loss. Two, if willful and malicious misappropriation exists, the court may award exemplary damages. So this is serious business. Particularly with the great value under consideration for the power company industry, the marketing of value of electricity and power. And so I have to advise you that I believe will be obliged to honor and enact the trade secret claim by SME. One further point on that issue. The attorney for SME has delivered via fax a letter to me today, and he states this. Quote, this letter is sent to you on behalf of Southern Montana Electric Generation and Transmission Cooperative, Inc., to request that, regardless of the city's decision whether to appeal this ruling, the city not make available to the public the documents and categories of documents that information for which it has claimed confidentiality. So, there you have it. You know, it's a complex piece of business, and always are. Difficult to deal with, but I will be standing by for any questions you may have for me during your deliberation.
But as I read, Judge, first to me,
I think that's exactly right. That final line of the decision that I quoted to you with the constitutional protection only speaks to draft documents. So I think the decision is limited.
Pardon me then.
That's exactly right. As I said, SME did not file their affidavits claiming until after this lawsuit was filed. So it wasn't a fact existence at the time. It could not possibly have been part of the case. The complaint never amended, so the whole issue of trade secret was never before the district court. I think that's exactly right. There is one more check and balance involved. When the affidavit is filed, with the government entity, claim government entity also has to review documentation in light of the affidavit to verify the claim, and city staff has done that.
Well,
there's no statutory. Yes, I would have to tell you that vary from department to department to individual file or sub. But except for the exclusions made pursuant to the statute 404, unless it's specifically excluded thereby, any document in the custody of a government entity agency is presumably a public record. Falls in one of the categories, and I'm sure you maybe have read the statute with regard to the exclusion, but there's of course more than preliminary drafts. Reading from the statute, it says the term does not include, that is, public record, does not include any paper, correspondence, form, book, photograph, microfilm, magnetic tape, computer storage media, map, drawing, or other type of document that is for reference purposes only, a preliminary draft, a telephone messaging slip, a routing slip, part of a stock of publications or of pre-printed forms or a superseded publication. So there's a laundry list there of items that the legislature has considered and has determined not fall within the definition. Presumably all other items in the custody of a government entity are public records. Well, can't be fall within one of these categories that I've just read to you under that exemption. You have to conclude that it was in the custody of the public entity record. I think that's coming pretty close to what I'm saying. I've made a lot of statements here, I think, fairly critical of the court's decision. Didn't want to leave you with the impression that I felt that that was the only consideration to be made here. The statute, the Becky case, and so on. Have to understand that, as I say, the Montana court has been very vigorous in holding that Constitution is probably the most aggressive, avant-garde, greatest protection of individual rights, public rights, State of the Union. I'm not telling you this is any slam dunk. If you go up on appeal, it'll be a very, very tall hill to climb, but a strong argument in support of it. State legislation. I'm glad you asked that question, because in fact, I left out something I was worried of, trade secret. The Montana court has already, I mean, the state Supreme Court has already passed upon this in 2003 in Great Falls Tribune versus the SC, and they upheld the Trade Secrets Act. Do it on the basis of Article 2, Section 9 of the Constitution, regard to the right to know vis-a-vis the privacy. They turned instead and upheld it pursuant to due process and equal protection clauses of the state and federal constitution. Process and equal protection clauses are typically relevant to property rights. That's why the court rely on those provisions of the Constitution. So, if anyone is going to challenge a claimed trade secret by anyone, they're going to know that the constitutional issue involved has been settled law now. The only question is whether or not there's a real economic threat. There's plenty of statutory authority here to seek injunctions, to seek damages, and always be sued. But the issue of whether or not it's a legitimate and legal decision, trade secret, has already been settled.
That, and it's never happens.
Drafts.
Looking at it in a big picture.
Debilitating.
Yeah.
Well, your question zeroes in exactly on the practical aspects of the decision and Federal Freedom of Information Act, Exemption 5 that I spoke of, patients from the federal court. The chilling effect that it will have on deliberations, the effect it will have on outside parties dealing with the city, all kinds of perhaps confusion, misconceptions that might result where government staff and parties not freely consult written direction for fear of operating in this.
This is far reaching.
Well, that's an interesting question also. This decision was rendered in the 8th Judicial District. It is binding. Outside of the 8th Judicial District, it is merely precedence. Not binding outside of those territories, not included within very strong precedent, I would submit, but make a state Supreme Court decision to make it binding. they appear to be reasonable. Say that they were fortunate. Oh, in fact, the matter, I just got it in today.
Draft document, except in view. Yeah.
Well, I don't have a dog in this. I've seen this inside our community. I have to agree that this decision. I think the public has a feeling for SME, public in the Great Falls. And when it comes to SME and trade secrets and things like that, as an individual, I have to question. A corporation starts using public assets and funds and whatnot, public assets, and how far? Somewhere along the line.
Taylor? 3417 4th. I just wish to commend your decision today not to appeal. This started a process with city staff and yourselves. We commend particularly documents that they produce. Our procedure going, we think adequate. And
Ed McKnight, 905. I'd also like to commend you. That's the type of thoughtful delivery. I'm a little bit confused writing the question. Document retention, are we just going to not appeal the decision? A bit confused over the trade secret, because I think most of us are familiar with what a secret is, especially just, you know, exactly are those 11 secrets, exactly is in that. So, I mean, we've been burning coal and power plants for pretty much 100 years, and there's nothing, I don't think, that is not understood about the engineering construction method.
Documents. My feeling is that draft document by is able to distinguish what the bill to prior to that final.
Get out, formerly John Hubbard, formerly John Anger. See it as our right to know. Freedom of Information Act, cut and dry. Trade secrets, what are you hiding? Are you afraid I'm going to build a coal-fired generator in my garage? Freedom of Information Act, it is right in your face.
Further comment.
Evans, members of the commission, for the record, my name is Tim. How we understand that we're liberated here today is we're talking about a very narrow scope of information, both documents. By what may be the percent, there are some very important trade secret information documents that you have, process of filing the affidavit, far more to the construction. Advent of the Policy Act of 19, subsequent FERC orders, competitive and very open, and very, very competitive in terms. That is why, for example, even always erred on the side of the public's right to know. Valued customer in Southern Montana, position that was thoughtful, very thorough. Bronson said, very easily could come up. Setting that aside, they launched that all information.
Public comment.